William and Photography. Mrs. Adolphus Crane was William's mother's second cousin and William's godmother. Mrs. Adolphus Crane was rich and immensely respectable. She lived at a distance, and so was spared the horrible spectacle of William's daily crimes. His meetings with her had not been fortunate so far, in spite of his family's earnest desire that he should impress her favourably. There had been that terrible meeting 2 months ago. William was running a race with one of his friends. It was quite a novel race invented by William. The competitors each had their mouths full of water, and the one who could run the farthest without either swallowing his load or discharging it won. William, in the course of the race, encountered Mrs. Adolphus Crane, who was on her way to William's house to pay him a surprise visit. She recognised him and addressed to him a kindly, affectionate remark. Of course, if he'd had time to think over the matter from all points of view, he might have conceived the idea of swallowing the water before he answered. But, as he afterwards explained, he had no time to think. The worst of it was that the painful incident was witnessed by almost all William's family from the drawing-room window. Mrs. Adolphus Crane's visit on that occasion was a very short one. It was felt strongly that something must be done to win back her favour. When Mrs. Adolphus Crane's birthday approached, Mrs. Brown had a great inspiration. "We'll have William's photograph taken for her." It was quite simple to make an appointment at the photographer's, but it was another matter to provide an escort for him. Mrs. Brown happened to have a bad cold, so William's elder sister Ethel was induced, mainly by bribery, to go with William to the photographer's. William, at the appointed hour, was in a state of suppressed fury and cleanliness. He set off down the road with Ethel, washed and brushed and combed. Bosom friends of his, with jerseys, with normal dirty hands and faces, passed him and stared at him in amazement. He acknowledged their presence only by a cold stare. On ordinary days, he was a familiar figure on that road himself, also comfortably jerseyed and gloriously dirty. He would then have greeted them with a war whoop and a friendly punch. But now he was an outcast, a pariah, a thing apart, a boy in his best clothes and kid gloves on an ordinary morning. The photographer was awaiting them. William returned his smile of welcome with a scowl. "So this is our little friend," said the photographer. "And what's his name?" William grew purple. Ethel began to enjoy it. "Willie," she said. Ethel knew perfectly well his feeling with regard to the name Willie. It was a deliberate revenge. Ethel had various scores to wipe off against William, and it was not often that she had him entirely at her mercy. William growled. That is the only word that describes the sound emitted. "Pretty name for a pretty boy," commented the photographer, in sprightly vein. Ethel gurgled. William looked unspeakable things at them both. "Come forward," said the photographer, invitingly. "Any preparations? Fancy dress?" "I think not," gurgled Ethel. "I have some nice costumes. A little page, bubbles. No, but perhaps the hair is hardly suitable. Cupid? I have some pretty wings and drapery. But perhaps the little boy's expression is hardly... No, I think not. Remove the cap and gloves, my little chap." He looked up and down William's shining, immaculate person. "Oh, very nice. And now, my boy..." He waved the infuriated William to a rustic woodland scene at the other end. "Now, just stand here. That's right. No, not quite so stiff, and no, not quite so hunched up, my little chap. The hands resting carelessly. One on the hip, I think. Just easy and natural. That's right. No, hardly. Relax the brow a little, and... No, not a grimace, no. It would spoil a pretty picture. And the feet so, and the head so. The hair is slightly deranged. That's better." Let it stand to William's eternal credit that he resisted the temptation to bite the photographer's hand as it strayed among his short locks. At last he was posed, and the photographer returned to the camera. But during his return, William moved feet, hands and head to an easier position. The photographer sighed. "Oh, he's moved. Willie's moved. What a pity. Now, we'll have to begin all over again." He returned to William and very patiently rearranged William's feet and hands and head. "That's right. That's sweet. Yeah, a very pretty picture." Ethel had retired hysterically behind a screen. The photographer returned to his camera. William was clinging doggedly to his pose, anything to put an end to this torture. "Oh, right," commented the photographer. "Splendid, very pretty. Head just a little more on one side, expression a little less melancholy. Smile, please, just a little smile. No, it's better without the smile." Suppressed gurgles from behind the screen. "One more, please. Sitting, I think, this time. Legs crossed easily, naturally so. The elbow resting on the arm of the chair, and the cheek upon the hand, so." He retired to a distance and examined the effect, with his head on one side. "A little spoilt by the expression, perhaps, but very pretty. The expression a little less fierce, if you'll pardon the word." William here deigned to speak. "I can't look any different to this," he remarked coldly. "Now, think of the things I say," went on the photographer brightly. "Sweeties? Ah, do I see a saucy little smile?" As a matter of fact, he didn't, because at that moment Ethel peeped round the screen for another look at the priceless sight of William in his best suit, in the familiar attitude of the Bard of Avon. Encountering the concentrated fury of William's gaze, she retired hastily. "Seaside with spade and bucket? Pantomimes? That nice, soft, furry pussycat you've got at home?" But seeing William's expression change from one of scornful fury to one of rage and fury, he hastily pressed the little ball, lest worse should follow. The proofs arrived next week. They were highly appreciated by William's family. Only Mrs. Brown did not join in the roars of laughter. She was delighted. "I think they're awfully nice," she said. "And he looks so smart and clean." "You'll have to write a letter to your godmother, dear," said Mrs. Brown, as Mrs. Adolphus Crane's birthday drew near. "Me?" said William bitterly. "I should think I've done enough for her." No, said Mrs. Brown firmly. "You must write a letter." "Well, I don't know what to say to her." "Well, say whatever comes into your head." "I don't know how to spell all the words that come into my head." "I'll help you, dear." Mrs. Adolphus Crane was touched both by William's letter and the photograph. She asked William to her birthday tea party. To William, this was the climax of a long chain of insults. "But I don't want to go to tea with her," he said in dismay. "But she wants you, darling," said Mrs. Brown. "I expect she liked your photograph." William, resigned and martyred, set off. He arrived early and was shown into Mrs. Adolphus Crane's magnificent drawing-room. Mrs. Adolphus Crane, as magisterial and magnificent and depressing and enormous as her house, entered.
"Good afternoon, William. Now, I've a pleasant little surprise for you."
William's gloomy countenance brightened.
"I've put your photograph into my album. There, what an honour for a little boy."
William's countenance relapsed into gloom.
"You can look at the album while I'm getting ready, and then when the guests come, you can show it to them. Won't that be nice?"
She departed. William was trapped. Trapped in a huge and horrible drawing room by a huge and horrible woman, and he would have to stay there at least 2 hours. He felt a sudden fury against the art of photography in general. William's sudden furies against anything demanded some immediate outlet. So William, with the aid of a pencil, looked at Mrs. Adolphus Crane's family album till Mrs. Adolphus Crane was ready. Then she arrived, and soon after her, the guests, or rather such of them as had not had the presence of mind to invent excuses for their absence. For funeral affairs were Mrs. Adolphus Crane's parties. Liveliness and hilarity dropped slain on the doorstep. The guests came sadly into the drawing-room, and Mrs. Adolphus Crane dispensed gloom from the hearthrug.
"How do you do? Thank you so much. I doubt whether I shall live to see another. Yes, my nerves. By the way, my little godson."
They turned to look at William, who was sitting in silent misery in a corner, his hands on his knees. He returned their interested stares with his best company frown. On the chair by him was the album.
Have you seen the family album? Went on Mrs. Adolphus Crane. It's most interesting. Do look at it.
A group of visitors sadly gathered round it, and one of them opened it. Mrs. Adolphus Crane did not join them. She knew her album by heart. She took her knitting, sat down by the fire, and poured forth her knowledge.
The first one is Great Uncle Joshua, a splendid old man, never touched tobacco or alcoholic drinks in his life.
They looked at Great Uncle Joshua. He sat grim and respectable, with his hand on the table, but a lately added pipe in pencil adorned his mouth, and his hand seemed to encircle a tankard. Quite suddenly, animation returned to the group by the album. They began to believe they were going to enjoy it, after all.
Then comes my poor dear mother.
Poor dear mother wore a large eyeglass with a black ribbon and a wild Indian headdress. The group by the album grew large. There seemed to be some magnetic attraction about it.
Then my paternal Uncle James, a very handsome man.
Paternal Uncle James might have been a very handsome man before his nose had been elongated for several inches and his lips curved into an enormous smile, showing gigantic teeth. He smoked a large, vulgar-looking pipe.
A beautiful character, too, said Mrs. Adolphus Crane.
She continued the family catalogue, and the visitors followed the photographs in the album. They were all embellished. Some had pipes, some had blue noses, some black eyes, some giant spectacles, some comic headdresses. Some had received more attention than others. Aunt Julia, a most saintly woman, positively leered from her cabinet with a huge nose and a black eye and a cigar in her mouth. The album was handed from one to another. An unwonted hilarity and vivacity reigned supreme. And always there were crowds round the album. Mrs. Adolphus Crane was surprised, but vaguely flattered. Her party seemed more successful than usual. People seemed to be taking quite a lot of notice of William, too. One young curate, who had wept tears over the album, pressed half a crown into William's hand. By some unerring instinct, they guessed the author of the outrage. As a matter of fact, Mrs. Adolphus Crane did not happen to look at her album till several months later, and then it did not occur to her to connect it with William. But this afternoon she somehow connected the strange spirit of cheerfulness that pervaded her drawing-room with him, and was most gracious to him.
"He's been so good," she said to Mrs. Brown when she arrived to take William home. "Quite helped to make my little party a success."
Mrs. Brown concealed her amazement as best she could.
"But what did you do, William?"
she said on the way home, as William plodded along beside her, his hands in his pockets lovingly fingering his half-crown.
"Me?" said William, innocently. "Nothing."